Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, as the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Good morning and welcome to the Sports Hub Golf Club. We got a lot to get to today. And I'm not just saying that as a false means to like get you excited about the show today, because there is a lot of stuff. First of all, this is the last day here in the Brighton studios of 98.5 The Sports Hub. Not going to get all weepy or anything because everybody's making the move over to the new building, but there will be a lot of talk of that today. So if you hear us talking about moving or leaving here, it's only because we are leaving this studio and headed to our new digs over on Morrissey Boulevard, the brand new beautiful studios being built right now. So, and should be completed by tonight, I would hope, because this is the last day we're going to broadcast from here. So this will be the last Sports Hub Golf Club from this location. We are less than a week away from the British Open, from the third major championship of the year. So, before the first major of the year, we had a guy named Brendan Steele on the program, who is, of course, on the PGA Tour, and you've seen him out here playing at the Deutsche Bank and Dell Technologies. And he was, I tell you what, he was one of the handful of guys who actually made the cut at the U.S. Open. So Brendan Steele will be joining us later here this morning. He heads over to Carnoustie later today. So he has taken time to talk to us here this morning before he heads out. So thank you in advance to Brendan Steele for joining us on the program. We're also going to talk with a couple of guys from George Wright Golf Course, namely the superintendent, Len Curtin, and a guy named Mark Mungem, who has a company called Mungem Cornish Golf Design, because they were responsible for the redesign not only of George Wright Golf Course in Hyde Park, but of William J. Devine in Dorchester, more commonly known as Franklin Park. So Mark and his company and the guys and the people at the city and the golf courses, everybody, they're the ones behind the redesign at George Wright and Franklin Park, the two munis in the city of Boston. And we are a Boston-based golf show, so I give a lot of attention to those two courses. A lot because, you know, Hyde Park right next door to where I've been living for many years now, and George Wright has served as my home golf course. So I was happy to be able to talk with Len, the super over at George Wright, and Mark, the architect, earlier this week, especially due to the setting, because the setting was the Mass Amateur, which they held at Franklin Park and George Wright. Now, for people who don't know or maybe don't care because you're like me and you have no hope of ever playing in a serious golf tournament because you're not good enough, this is a big deal. The Mass Amateur brings together golfers who are the best of the best in terms of amateur status, guys who, several of whom, have already announced their plans to turn professional very, very soon. And you get a handful of guys who have played professionally and are now have regained their amateur status, like Matt Parziali, the Brockton firefighter who got the invite to the Masters. He won the U.S. mid-amateur last year. So here's an amateur champion in terms of who's achieved national recognition and has national titles. And then Matt went on to play at Augusta. He went to the U.S. Open. I mean, these are top-level golfers. And where did they contest the Mass Amateur this year? Two courses, Franklin Park and George Wright. It's a really cool thing to be able to think that the two Boston City munis were, quote-unquote, good enough to host amateur championships. And I've been singing their praises for years. George Wright especially, because I live close to there. But let me tell you about Franklin Park. And people kind of like chuckle and say, like, oh, Franklin Bark, really? Yeah, really. If you haven't played it in a while, you have no idea what they've done in terms of the redesign of that golf course, the conditions out there, and how I've been bragging about George Wright, especially for years, but just what a great golf experience it is. And we're going to talk with those guys here in a few minutes. Back to the Mass Amateur for a moment. I went out there, and that's where I talked with Mark and Len the other day for what I think was day two of the championship. It started at Franklin Park. It turned a match play over at George Wright for the second, third, and then yesterday it wrapped up. And I will almost certainly mispronounce his name, but Patrick Frodick or Frodi from he plays out of the Dedham Golf and Polo Club, I think it's called. One of these courses, again, that I'll never have a chance of like setting foot on. You know, great. I'm going to go with Frody for now until somebody corrects me. And I called the head pro at George Wright last night, like, hey, the guy who won the Mass Amateur, how do you pronounce his last name? I believe Scotty Allen was probably just decompressing after having all those people at his golf course for so many days and being under the, I guess, under the spotlight. But the fact is, the course shined through, Patrick shined through in the 36-hole championship, which didn't go 36 because Patrick got the win 4-3 over Herbie Akins, who plays out of Old Sandwich. And there were golfers from all over the state, from, you know, top-level private clubs who went to contest the Mass Amateur at Franklin Park and George Wright. It was a cool story this week. It was a great story for Mass Golf. And just everybody at Mass Golf, everybody involved in the championship and the USGA side, and just everyone who put it together and got it to these two golf courses should be commended, because they lucked out with the weather. They had a wonderful turnout, especially for the first couple rounds when you had so many players still participating before, you know, the big cutdowns took place and everybody got a chance to see not just the players, but the people who got to walk the course and spectate and see what was going on there. So congratulations to Patrick for winning the 110th Mass Amateur Championship once again, with the 4-3 win over Herbie Akins. And like I said, I got a chance to go out there and see a little bit of it myself. I saw Matt Parziali tee off earlier this week when he was playing. I think that was on Wednesday, the day I was over at George Wright. And these guys are so unbelievably good. The guys who compete at this level, especially after their first couple of cutdowns and they get into the match play, the level of golf that these top amateurs play at, it just goes to show you how good they are at the next level and the level beyond that when they're playing on the PGA Tour. It's just fascinating to me to see how good you have to be even to play at an elite amateur level, much less play at a professional level. So we'll talk with a couple of guys from George Wright. As I said, the architect, the super, Brendan Steele, who is on the PGA Tour and is headed over to Carnoustie for the British Open, which will begin next week. We'll talk with him later in the hour. Our Sports Hub Golf Club tournament, if you're participating in that, that's taking place on Monday. And one other thing I want to let you know is that the guys from Core Golf are going to be out there, and they're going to be the Beat the Pro pros on one of the holes there at our own little championship there up at Atkinson Resort and Country Club. The guys at Core are having their own tournament at the Hopkinton Country Club. That'll be coming up on July 22nd. I'm going to tell you more about that, but you should know right now you can go to coregolf.com/invitational to sign up for that. I told you we had a lot of stuff today, guys. So we're going to get to all of it, though, starting with the guys from George Wright. They'll be coming up next.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I'm standing here on the patio of George Wright Golf Course. It's day one of match play here for the Mass Amateur, and I'm standing here with Mark Mungem from Mungem Cornish Golf Design and Len Curtin, who is the course super. Mark, we'll start with you. You had a lot to do with the redesign and really kind of, I guess, the rebirth and regeneration of George Wright Golf Course.
Yeah, I have. In 2003, we did a master plan for the city of Boston, which we spelled out, you know, some improvements to the golf course. And then in 2009, I think we started working on the 13th hole and have continued with renovation work since then. A lot of redoing of bunkers, fairway changes, drainage work, path work. Been a lot of work.
Now, I've had a chance to see this develop over the years because I started playing George Wright in about 05, and I've seen it really, I mean, change so much over the years. Have you had a part in, like, all these redesigns, whether it's the 13th hole that you mentioned or the tee boxes?
Yeah, our firm has been involved with all that work. Len Curtin here, he's also been obviously involved with a lot of the work, too. The city kind of creates a priority list as to what work they want to do. Len's a big part in putting together that priority list, and then we develop the plans and specifications and oversee the contractor in doing the work.
All right, well, let's talk to Len here for a second, because the conditions at George Wright, I'm going to pay you a compliment right off the bat here, Len. It's a testament to the work you guys do out here and the maintenance you guys do every single day on this golf course.
Well, first of all, Greg, thank you very much for the compliment. Yeah, we've our staff and, you know, Mark in particular, we have a team of people that starting from the top where we, as Mark said, set our priorities in terms of what we want to do, you know, to improve the golf course, you know, from a construction standpoint and from a redesign standpoint. But just the general daily maintenance routines, we've really tried to just try to improve upon it a little bit each year. The goal really is to take good conditions in the spring. Typically, the golf course is good, very good in the spring, very good in the fall. There have been times where it struggles a little bit in the summer due to the, you know, heat stress and weather. But the idea really is just to try and be able to get it to a point health-wise so we can bridge that gap and keep it really good in the middle of the summer and all season, really. Just keep it consistent.
Absolutely. All right, let's go back over to Mark here for a second. Mark, what kind of challenges are there when you take on a design like George Wright here in Hyde Park, which is a Donald Ross? People are nuts about Donald Ross golf
yes,
courses.
As they should be.
As they should be. And, you know, we saw a lot of this last year when the U.S. Senior Open was at Salem. What is on your mind when you go to do a redesign of a Donald Ross golf course?
I feel that my job is to protect the Donald Ross design as much as possible while also making sure that the course is modernized in a way that it will withstand the impacts of all the play that it gets. So that's really where I feel I come in. For instance, a lot of the work that we're doing here is on expansion of tees. The tees, you know, built in 1938 were pretty small. They didn't have forward tees at that point. So we're adding tees and expanding tees to better spread out the play and to create more variety in how the course plays. So
there's a lot of things that really go into it, but Mark and I really spend a lot of time trying to figure out what's going to be the least difficult way for us to maintain it from a staff level, make sure it's safe, make sure we're not creating you know, huge drop-offs or that could be, you know, potentially dangerous things. So he and I talk a lot about that before Mark does his final design work. So it's very much a team, and it's not just myself and Mark, but there's our golf pro Scott Allen and Dennis Roach, our business manager. They're all involved in this.
All right, I don't want to leave Franklin Park out of this discussion. By
no,
the way, Len Curtin is the course superhero at George Wright. Mark Mungem is with Mungem Cornish Golf Design because you've been involved with a redesign not only here at George Wright but also at Franklin Park.
Yeah, Franklin Park, similar issues as to George Wright, although at George Wright we had a big tree issue where the trees have really encroached on the playability of the golf course and brush along the edges have made it tougher to play. Whereas at Franklin Park it's a more wide open golf course. There's fewer trees. So there's not that issue, but at Franklin Park, the bunkers were really degraded, so we've rebuilt all the bunkers practically on the golf course, and a lot of some new paths, fairway changes, just cleaning up over at Franklin Park.
Okay, I'm going to give Len a heads up on your last question. Three things that golfers need to do when they're on the golf course. Don't give me replacing divots and replace divots and replace divots.
Yeah, okay.
Give me three good ones. Before we get to that, though, I want to know what's coming up next for George Wright from Mark Mungem here, who is the golf course architect here. What's coming up next for George Wright and Franklin Park, for that matter?
Well, our next project here is at George Wright is the 12th hole. That's the one we're going to tackle this coming fall. We're working on the plans for that right now.
And for those of you who only come here for sledding, that's the sledding hill.
That is the sledding hill, the 12th hole. The idea is to shift the tees a little bit to the left and make
them
bigger. We're going to continue the fairway. Right now you have an upper fairway and a lower fairway, and we're going to create a section of fairway that connects down to the lower fairway. That's for the, you know, for the weaker player. Obviously, the long hitter, they're not really impacted by the interruption. They're playing over that break. But for the shorter hitter, it gives them a way to play around the hole.
All right. Have you had enough time, Len, to think about the three things you want golfers to do?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest detriment we have out here is people repairing ball marks. That's a huge one. They don't repair ball marks. And that really affects the putting surfaces. I mean, you know, a golf course is only as good as its greens, right? So if your greens are nice and smooth and they roll well, that's a big thing. So repairing ball marks is huge. The other thing is we have such a tremendous amount of cart traffic on the golf course, and we have we navigate people around the golf course pretty well with our signage and our ropes and signs and all that other stuff. And we really find that there's a lot of people that either just through complete disrespect, or they're not educated enough in the game of golf that they pay no attention to it. So they'll either run over stuff or they'll go around signs and ropes, and that really makes our job a lot harder, because there's a reason why they're not supposed to be on those areas. So just being respectful of you know, what the golf course is instructing you to do, would make our job a lot easier.
And replace divots. Do you want to throw that
one?
Yeah,
well, divots, that's a big part of it, but you mentioned that already, and that's a...
How about bunkers?
Yeah, bunker rake. I mean, raking bunkers, sure, that's a big part of it, too. You know, again...
Although Len likes the bunkers to be pretty gnarly and rough.
I kind of do.
He wants them to be a penalty, so...
I'm a purist in golf, and bunkers are a hazard, you know, just like a creek is a hazard, and not allowed to ground your club there. So I have a somewhat of a fundamental disagreement that bunkers should be pristine.
And I do as well. I agree.
Yeah, completely. they you know, it should be difficult to hit out of a bunker. It shouldn't be easy.
Is it okay if I'm the last guy on the golf course in the evening to not rake the bunker?
Probably not.
No, I thought that was okay. No, I thought you guys would be at it first thing in the morning.
Yeah, no, because we really don't. We actually, our staff, we have a fairly small staff, so we only get to rake the bunkers a couple of times a week. So we really kind of depend on golfers to clean up after themselves. And with that, we don't think that's asking too much.
Okay, well, I want you to know, if you ever see me repairing a ball mark, and you will on virtually every green that I play, know that I am the best of the best, because I never leave a ball mark. It's very difficult to leave a ball mark when you're chipping from 5 yards off the green, which is what I do on every single hole. Yeah. So I'm really doing more than my part in
that's
area.
Good. At least somebody is.
Yeah. I try. Mark Mungem with Mungem Cornish Design. Great work out here so far, Mark. Can't wait to see what happens next, both here at George Wright and at Franklin Park. And I think everyone who's been out here for the Mass Amateur at both courses this week has had a chance to see the great work you've been doing.
Well, thanks, Hardy. It's been an honor to actually work here. Both golf courses are great golf courses and great designs. And the city of Boston has been awesome in that they've put money back into both facilities. We see so often where the money goes to other places, and it's been really necessary to put the money back in here, so that's been great.
And Len Curtin, all I can say really is thank you for all the work that you guys do out here, because this course has become something that I brag about and have been doing for years. I don't need to do it so much anymore because people know,
right.
But it's all because of the work that you've been doing and your staff, and along with guys like Mark to get this course, you know, to a place where it is really something worthy of bragging about.
Well, thank you very much. It's as much as I'd like to take all the credit myself, our staff, and we really do. We have a crew of folks that have worked here. You know, there's a core group of people that have worked on our staff now for 8 or 9 years, and the experience level they bring, and you know, the hard work that they've done. You're only as good as the people that work with you. So they deserve a tremendous amount of credit. It's nice to know your work is appreciated, and believe me, I know that the people that play golf up here appreciate it. So there's no need to say thank you.
And especially the top amateurs in the state who have been playing it here for the last couple of days, here and at Franklin Park. It's been a great showcase. days for Franklin Park, for George Wright, and for Mass Golf to show everybody that, you know, these city golf courses can be top-notch and give everybody, like, a wonderful playing experience. So thanks again, guys. I appreciate it. Mark, thanks for the time.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Lynn. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much. It was really nice talking to you.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Joining us once again here on the Sports Hub Golf Club, Brendan Steele, who is heading out for the British Open any minute now. So, Brendan, thanks for taking the time. I know you're busy, and you got to be excited, right?
Yeah, I'm really excited. It's always fun to play in a major championship, and the Open's really kind of a different one because you get over there and the fans are a little bit different, and the golf is a little bit different, the weather's a little different, so it's exciting. I haven't had a ton of success there in the past, but I think I've made some adjustments, and hopefully I can figure it out this time.
Well, let's talk about the golf for a minute or two here, because I think that's what people expect. But I'd really rather talk to you about music and other stuff. So, you know, we'll get this stuff out of the way. All right?
Perfect.
All right. As far as the British goes, the fans are different. People were trying to give Justin Thomas a hard time for what he said about it, but I went back and watched what he said. I think he's absolutely right. It's a different type of atmosphere, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a little bit more proper over there. I mean, they know their golf courses there, too. So they know, like, when you get into one of the little pot bunkers that you can't see the guy when he's in there, that if he just gets it out, it's a good shot. So you get cheers if you move the ball out of the bunker, for instance. You know, so it is that just kind of polite applause. It's funny over there, though. They are addicted to golf, and they love it. And, you know, obviously Scotland's the birthplace, so they get very excited for these events, and doesn't get any bigger than the Open Championship.
Are you like one of these golf historian guys, like a student of the game? Do you really get off on playing the super old courses, or is it, not to be dismissive, but is it just another golf course?
I really enjoy it. I'm not one of the big golf historians, the guys who go really crazy reading books and figuring everything out, but I do know the history, and I know a little bit more of the modern history. You know, for instance, like Carnoustie, obviously I watched in 99 with Vandeveld, and then I was able to play it in 99. About a month later, my dad took me over there to play when I was 16. So people have been asking me, oh, have you played Carnoustie before? And I'm like, well, yeah, but it was 99 and I was 16. So I don't think that's really going to prepare me for what I'm going to see this time.
Probably not. No. All right. So the last time we talked, it was right before the Masters. Do you want to talk about that? You did a podcast from there. That was fun. That part of it was good.
Yeah, that part of it was good. Yeah, I haven't played very well the last couple months. I had a really good start to the season last fall, and then a good start to the calendar year. And then probably right around the Masters up until now, I haven't had my best form, but that's kind of the way that things go as far as, like, it's golf is very cyclical. So you get a little bit off, and then you may fix one part of your game and something else goes away, and maybe it's just more attitude or energy or whatever the case may be. So for me, I haven't played that much over the last couple months. I've actually had 7 out of the last 9 weeks off, and that's been on purpose to try to have energy at the end of the season because I haven't had that the last couple of years. I've kind of run out of gas in the playoffs and at these last couple majors. So we're trying a little something different, and hopefully I'll accelerate through the finish line instead of backing up this year.
Right. Now, you made the cut at the Open, which was a huge accomplishment based on what a lot of guys were doing. But did the course get away from them a little bit?
Yeah, it was unfortunate. The Thursday and Friday, I thought it played really perfectly. They actually had the greens fairly slow and fairly soft the first couple days. We had some rain and the weather wasn't that warm, and so it was playing pretty nice, but there was some wind, and they used really tough pins, and I think they got exactly what they wanted out of it. Even the guys that shot a million the first couple days, they weren't complaining about the course setup. You know, all the great players that missed the cut and shot high numbers, it was just kind of like, yeah, well, you get penalized here if you don't play the proper shots, and you get into the fescue, and you get kind of whacking back and forth on some of these greens that have the runoffs. Saturday, we got out on the first hole, and I had probably 25 feet above the hole. And I said to my caddy, something's different here, and I don't know what it is, but we're in trouble today. And that was, I said that to him on the first hole. And I still proceeded to hit that putt about 10 feet by the hole and three putted. And I actually played okay on Saturday. I ended up shooting 75, missed a couple short putts on my way in. But we were watching the carnage all around us. I mean, the guys behind us on 15 both putted it off the green. The guy I was playing with on 13 putted it into the bunker from 20 feet. That was the one where Phil whacked it backwards there. And it just got a little bit nuts. And I think what happened was they were worried that with Dustin at 4 under par, if the wind didn't come up, then he might shoot 4 or 5 under on Saturday, and then they'd be looking at a double-digit under par winner, which of course the USGA can't stand.
Right.
The unfortunate thing was there were only two guys under par on Friday. I think they had it kind of right where they wanted it. And if Dustin's playing that much better than everybody else, I think that's fine and that's fair, and you identify the best player. But and they did get bailed out at the end because Brooks ended up winning and he played amazing golf. And the weekend got a little crazy, and Sunday was actually the exact opposite. They flooded the greens and made them really soft, and because they had killed them the day before, they got really bumpy, and so it was just unfortunate weekend.
All right, that's plenty of golf. That's enough of that. One more thing, though. I did see Matt Parziali the other day. He was playing in the Mass Amateur at my home course.
Yes.
A Muni here, like a mile from my house at George Wright Golf Course. And I had talked to him on the phone. I never had a chance to meet him. You played, I think, practice rounds and maybe even played in the first two rounds at Augusta with him this year.
Yeah, we've actually played a bunch together. So he happened to be at Augusta when I went to practice there before the tournament. And we've got a lot of mutual friends, Keegan Bradley, John Curran, all those guys that are my closest friends on tour are also good friends with Matt. And so we were able to meet up there and then play a practice round a couple weeks before the Masters. Both our dads walking around with us, really cool time. And then we were playing a practice round on Tuesday of the Masters week, and we got done, and the tee times had come out, and we got paired together. So then we played Thursday and Friday at the Masters, and then we went out and played a practice round at the U.S. Open as well. So we've had a lot of really cool moments over the last couple months, and he's just an awesome guy and a great player, and what a cool story. I mean, just fantastic. Can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah, Matt's a really good guy. Okay, Brendan Steele is on the phone. He's headed off to the British Open later today. You also do a podcast, Brendan, that I really enjoy. It's called Member Guest. You do it with a couple other guys, including Dave Phoenix Farrell from Linkin Park, who is a buddy of yours. And you welcome in other golfers and musicians, including one of the episodes that just dropped, Phil from the band Of Mice and Men.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, Phil Manansala from Of Mice and Men. He's a really good friend of ours, and he loves golf and obviously loves music and is in a big band. And so we had him on and just kind of sit around and chat about things. And it basically, the way I try to describe it to people is, if you're just hanging out with your buddies, having a beer after work or after a round of golf or whatever, that's what we try to do. We don't want it to be very interviewee. We don't have any really specific topics that we want to touch on. And sometimes it gets serious, and most of the time it's pretty fun and funny. So we just started into season two, and we actually had an episode come out yesterday with Julie Foudy, the legendary U.S. women's soccer player. So that was pretty fun to do as well. So we try to hit the gamut of different things, from sports to music to lifestyle stuff. We've got a couple guys coming up that'll be pretty interesting from a lifestyle standpoint as well.
Excellent. Well, one of the things you talked about was the fact that you got to use walk-up music when you played at the Zurich. And I was like everyone else. I'm like, oh, I bet Brendan's going to pick a Linkin Park song because he's buddies with Dave. Instead, since you're playing with Jamie Lovemark, you guys go for the tongue-in-cheek kind of easy out California guy. Oh, California love. We'll just go with Pac. I mean, do you kick yourself now? You think, oh, we should have given this some more thought.
No, we like that one. We were trying to do something that would fit both of us. And Dave actually wasn't going to let me do Linkin Park anyway. He was like, no, that would be stupid. Don't do that. The only other option that, the guys liked was maybe doing the member guest theme song, which we actually had, Mike Shinoda actually wrote the theme song for us. So
yeah. Shinoda, who by the way is selling $80 flannels through his website right now. I understand it's got a logo on it, but at the end of the day, it's a flannel shirt that you're asking 80 bucks for, Mike. Uh-huh. Do you own one?
I don't, not yet.
Right.
Those are brand new, so I may need to step up and get a couple.
Now, listen, the other thing that you talked about, I believe at Greenbrier, when you were out, probably not playing well that tournament because you were like first off on a Saturday or Sunday, something happened out on the course that day. Could you tell again what happened?
Yeah, so I was playing poorly. Let's see, I made the cut on the number. I go out early Saturday morning. I'm not playing very well. I'm a few over. Get to the 10th hole. There's nobody on the golf course yet. There's no fans there. You know, it's still only probably 9:30 and I'm making the turn. And I hit one way right and don't see where it's coming down. I don't know if we yelled four or not, but there's nobody over there. So, you know, shouldn't be a big deal. Anyway, we get up there and there's this family over there and there's two little boys and there's the parents and one of the little boys is on the ground and he's writhing in pain, you know, like Neymar would be doing in the World Cup. And I'm like, oh no, I've clobbered this kid, but the parents and the brother don't seem to be that concerned about it. Right. So I come over and I'm like, hey, is everything okay? And he's like, you hit me with the ball. And
there's four so people on the entire golf course and you found one of them.
And so it gets worse though. So his parents are like, ah, oh, he's fine. Don't worry about him. It's no big deal. And he's like, I'm not fine. I told you this was going to happen. If we came to the golf course, I was going to get hit by a ball. So this kid had had the prophecy. He had showed up. He told his parents, I don't want to go to the golf tournament because I'm going to get hit by a rogue ball. And he walks through the gate, and he's there for 3 minutes. And sure enough, one comes in and hits him. And, of course, it comes from me. So.
That's awesome. All right, Brendan Steele, here's what I want you to do. I want you to have a great time playing at the British. I want you to make the cut. I'm not going to say, go win it. Let's do a top 10 finish. Can we do that? You want to do a top 10?
Yeah, we can do that. Right. I would like a little hardware. I'd like to be the champion golfer of the year.
That'd be fun.
That'd be good.
That'd be fun. But more than anything, I want to be able to sit down with you and like do this for real when you're at the Dell Technologies Labor Day weekend. So
that sounds great. We can definitely do that.
All right, let's do that. And Brendan, always good to talk to you, man. Have fun and good luck at the British. And like I said, we'll see you Labor Day weekend. How's that sound?
That sounds good. Thanks, okay. Hardy.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
Back here on the Sports Hub Golf Club. Always good to talk to Brendan Steele and appreciate him taking time before he leaves for the British Open today. Also, that member guest podcast is a pretty good listen. If you're into not just golf, but just they've had various people on the show from various walks of life, sports. He talked about you know, having a soccer guest on. They've had other golfers on, musicians, because one of the guys on the podcast is Dave Phoenix Farrell from Linkin Park. He and Brendan have been friends for a while. So they do a little music, do a little golf, do a little sports, do a little lifestyle stuff. It's a good listen. So I do enjoy the member guest podcast. Now, I go one of two ways with the podcast. They either have to be like super well produced, like hardcore news finding, like, you know, unsolved murder type of podcast, something that takes 2 years to put together with a team of 25 people, or just four dudes in a room talking about like sports and music. Those are the two podcasts I tend to gravitate toward. And Brendan's is in the latter category, but it's really good. So member guest is the name of it. It's pretty cool. So thank you to Brendan. I want to talk about for a minute the proposed $10 million match that I guess got floated out earlier this year by Phil Mickelson. And it got some more play last week when somebody was asked about it, and Phil said, oh, yeah, we were trying to put it together for July 3rd, but it didn't come together. Hopefully, Tiger and I will be able to do this $10 million match. Now, if you're of a certain age, you probably remember Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, where they would put a couple of players on the golf course, and they still show it sometimes on, like, you know, ESPN Classic, or they'll show it on the Golf Channel. And they're certainly from a different era. I mean, you can tell just from the commentating, the way they're edited together, but the notion of just watching two guys go at it on the golf course is not in that way. Billy Lanny, honest to God, your mind sometimes. Watching two guys battle on the golf course, you know, swinging the wrenches. There you go. Is that better, Will? Is not an altogether unappealing prospect, right? Because that's what you root for down the stretch of major championships. You want to see... You know, we wanted to see Dustin Johnson and Patrick Reed, like, dueling. You know, you root for a really good pairing in one of the final groups, and to have both of those guys be in the hunt back and forth, trading, you know, birdies, and all, it turns into almost match play in a stroke play tournament. But in these televised, you know, made for TV matches that they used to do, and according to Phil, Tiger and Phil both want to do one. It is match play, and you just go hole for hole, and you know, winner take all at the end. There are a couple of, you know, just moments where I just wanted to kind of raise my hand at the back of the room and be that guy and say, just real quickly here, when you say $10 million match, you putting up your own money, Phil? Because I, me being me, I got a problem either way. Number one, if you're not putting up your own money, then you're... It's just a couple of guys with more money than any other golfer out there playing for more money. So I don't know how much that jazzes me up. That really doesn't get my juices flowing, seeing a couple of guys worth, oh, I don't know, $500 million playing for $10 million. $10 million? That's an absurd amount of money. But not to those guys. So that doesn't really get me going. Oh, are you going to put your own money on the line? Well, number one, I don't believe it. And number two, hey, Phil, didn't you narrowly escape federal prison after not wanting or being able to pay off on $1 million golf gambling debt to that Billy Walters guy out in Las Vegas? You know, Billy Walters, the guy who gave you the stock tip, who ended up going to federal prison. Him and the other guy who gave him the tip that they passed along to you so you could turn around that stock and make $940,000 in a day. You remember when the FBI and the SEC were waiting for you after that golf tournament and they questioned you and then you turned on your friends and they went to prison and you stayed out? Phil, you remember all that? Do you think it's a great look for you to be paying your own way, to either be playing for someone else's money or using your own money and gambling for that kind of money on the golf course? You want to do it privately, of course. I think it's in your DNA, and it's one of the things that makes you likable to a lot of people. I just don't know if I would be flaunting it right now, because he literally got away with it. He took the stock tip, he turned the money around, he paid off his $1 million gambling debt to Billy Walters, who then went to prison for it, as did the other guy. But Phil stayed out. Now Phil wants to go play golf for $10 million from Tiger Woods because he thinks it'd be fun. I don't know how fun it is for your buddies who are sitting in prison right now, because that's essentially what you were doing with them, only instead of reaching into your pocket to pay the debt, you decided to take a stock tip illegally and turn around and pay it that way. I won't get into the minutiae of it, but there are many articles written about it. It is well documented what happened in this case, who's in prison, who didn't go, and you read that and tell me if it's still the best look for Phil Mickelson to be playing publicly anyway, high stakes golf. Now that aside, if Tiger and Phil were playing a $10 million match, regardless of whose money it was, I'd still watch. I absolutely would still watch. But the last problem I have with it is this. Phil borrows a line that's been used by gambling people for a long time. It's used by poker players. It's used by the golf hustler described in Michael Connick's book, The Man with the $100,000 Breasts, which is a series of essays, and it's based on a guy who won a bet for $100,000. He was into a bunch of dudes for, of all things, backgammon. These are big backgammon players. And this guy owed a bunch of money and said, I'll let you out of it if you get breast implants and wear them for a year. The guy says, I owe you $100,000, and that's all I have to do? The guy says, yeah. He goes, fine, I'll do it. And he did it. The book is called The Man with $100,000 Breasts. If you're into gambling, it is a absolutely 100% must read. That's one of the essays in the book. One of the other essays is about a golf hustler. And the guy says, the trick is to get somebody playing for an amount of money they are uncomfortable with. What makes them uncomfortable? And Phil borrows that line. He says, I want to play for whatever amount is going to make Tiger uncomfortable. Well, good luck finding that number, dude, especially if it's not his money. So, like, the premise of the entire match is flawed. I don't think they're using their own money. I don't think there is an amount of money that's going to make either one of these guys uncomfortable if they're not putting it up themselves. And it would have to be an absurd amount that they're not going to get to $50 million or $100 million or something that's just not going to happen in order to really make this something that they're going to sweat over. And again, having said all that, if Tiger and Phil were on this weekend instead of the John Deere Classic playing golf for $10 million, which would almost certainly be at one of the golf courses in Las Vegas. Shadow Creek, I think, would be a wonderful course to see it, because most people don't get to see Shadow Creek. That is the super exclusive club Steve Wynn built years ago. You can only go play it if you're staying at an MGM property. You have to be staying at an MGM property. You have to take the limo service to and from the club. You may not drive yourself to the club. They do a tee time about once every 45 minutes to an hour. You'll never see anyone in front of you. You'll never see anyone behind you. Costs about $500-$600 to play, but most people don't get to see it. They don't want to drop that kind of coin for the round. They're not staying at that hotel, and there are no exceptions. Bill Clinton was in town, staying at the Bellagio. I want to go play Shadow Creek. What hotel are you staying at? Bellagio? Can't do it. Oh, so-and-so wants to have his drivers take him to the car. Nope, you have to take our car service. We don't let anyone else in the gates. You come here, you play at Shadow Creek, and then you leave, and that's how it works. That would be cool. If Tiger and Phil went and played their match at Shadow Creek and the world got a chance to see what that course really looks like and how it operates there, I've had a couple of buddies who played it. It's the real deal, man. It's cool. People would watch. I would watch. But don't tell me it's going to make either one of you uncomfortable, even if you're playing for your own money, because you're worth so much. Phil Mickelson is still one of the top paid athletes in the world. Top 20 on the Forbes list every year. He didn't win all that much anymore. In case you haven't been watching golf, his endorsement money alone is enough to make him one of the top paid athletes in the world. Tiger Woods, still one of the top paid athletes in the world. He hasn't won in years. Doesn't matter. These guys have so much money. The money part of it isn't as interesting as just watching the two of them match play 18 holes at a golf course that normally we wouldn't get a chance to see. That's what would excite me about watching that match between those two. All right. I mentioned earlier that Core Golf is going to be out at our golf tournament here on Monday when we go up to Atkinson Resort and Country Club, Atkinson, New Hampshire. Can't wait. It's one of my favorite days of the year. A chance to go up there and hang out with a bunch of people who were lucky enough to get in early enough to get their spot in the tournament. So that'll be happening on Monday. And as I said, Core Golf will be there on one of the holes for the Beat the Pro. I think it's the 11th hole where one of the guys from Core will hit a shot. If you hit a shot closer to the pin than theirs, then I don't know, win a puppy or something. But they're having their own golf tournament. That's taking place on July 22nd. Every foursome who was involved in the first annual Core Golf Invitational on July 23rd, I guess. Yes, July 23rd at Hopkinton Country Club. Everybody is going to get a free open session with Bill McInerney, who's the co-founder at Core, the day before for like an hour. An hour lesson from Bill McInerney is worth a lot of money. So you get that. Sign up at coregolf.com/invitational. It's going to be at Hopkinton Country Club Monday, July 23rd. So that sounds like that's a week from Monday, right? All right. First Core Golf Invitational. CoreGolf.com/invitational. All right. I think we covered everything. Oh, yeah. We got to take care. Thank you. Thank you, Will. I don't have it here in front of me, but we got to do the Deep Eddy 19th hole. Every week we pick a new 19th hole to talk about and a great place to grab a drink after a round, spend some time, you know, see some old friends, good for the soul. Maybe enjoy a nice Deep Eddy vodka, which is authentic American vodka made in the heart of Texas. Deep Eddy Distilling Company, Austin, Texas, 40% alcohol by volume. Please day drink responsibly. Thank you very much, Will. I've got one for you. A little patio that I got a chance to experience myself at the Blue Rock Golf Club down in Yarmouth, I believe. Last week, I got a chance to play golf. You ready for this, Ryan Johnston? Twice. I've played twice all year up until last week. I played 9 holes twice all year before 4th of July week. And I played 18 twice last week alone.
Was the family out of town?
No. My wife and I.
Did she kick you out of the house?
Played Blue Rock together. It's a par 3.
Oh, your
right
wife,
next to where
your
we
wife
were saying,
is a golfer. Huh?
Blue Rock was. I played it before. I love it. It's fun. It's a really, really nice, well-maintained par 3 and a great spot to just. You can stand there, grab yourself a beverage, and just watch people teeing off on the first hole, which is about 80 yards. It is the most terrifying tee shot I think I've ever hit in golf because it's like a three-quarter sand wedge downhill to this green. It's the first swing you make all day, and it's fun just to watch that guys tee off.
There's something to be said for sitting by either the first tee or the 18th green.
Yes.
Because you can just sit there and drink and make bets on who's going to, you think this guy's going to make this putt? Not a chance.
That's a great spot to do it. Also played the Paul Harning in Falmouth, which is, I guess, technically an executive course because there are par fours on that golf course. But my buddy Adam and I went and played 18 there. So I played 18 twice last week. And I don't care that they weren't, championship length golf courses. I played tee to green 18 times twice in 1 week. That doesn't happen in my life, but it did last week. So that was awesome.
By the way, I'm with you. If Tiger and Phil aren't putting up their own money, Yeah. So a bunch of sponsors put up $10 million and one of them wins it and the other one plays a free round of golf? Like,
it's kind of typical, Phil, to like borrow a line from someone else. I want to find out what amount makes him uncomfortable and playing for that amount of money. Okay, $1 billion. $1 billion might make him uncomfortable, but it's not his money anyway. So what's uncomfortable about it?
Yeah, he's not losing anything.
No, he and his generations of Tiger Woods family are going to be obscenely wealthy for hundreds of years. It doesn't matter whether he wins $10 million playing you in a 118 hole match.
Ultimately, that was kind of like the big selling point when they came up with the FedEx Cup. Or somebody's going to win $10 million. I'm like, yeah, and the next guy's going to win like $3 million. Like, am I supposed to feel bad for the second place guy?
But I would watch it. Everything that I poo-pooed about it, I would still watch it. If that were on this weekend instead of the John Deere Classic, yes. I'm watching that.
Well, hell, we used to, when Tiger, they did those things with, David Duvall. Remember they played that, prime time? They lit up the last few holes of the course.
You have an amazing memory. That's
was
right.
Was it, Bighorn or someplace?
Yes.
They played the Battle at Bighorn?
Yes.
And
David Duvall.
David Duvall was, the number one player in the world at that point.
And you know what happened? He got in shape, and it ruined his game. It did.
It's a lesson in that, kid.
He couldn't control the driver anymore. He could have hit it a mile.
What is the guy from Blues Traveler, John Popper? He got in shape. He lost his voice. What are you going to do? Sometimes you just got to go with it.
Yeah, couldn't honk on the bobo anymore. That harmonica don't sound the same when it's a skinny guy playing it. That's right. David Duvall did one of those. Holy crap, Ryan. I'm going to investigate that. And go back and watch
it. I think that was the first time they did it, right? They did the primetime match play. I tuned in for it. A lot of people did. It did huge rating.
I would be worried about getting out on time, but Billy Land is the only one who cares. I know you and Ryan,
it's the last day in the studio anyway.
Monday Night Golf.
You just don't want to leave. You've been here so long.
Series of match play challenges that ran from 99 to 2005, revived in 2012. Don't remember that.
The first match was played at Sherwood. The next three were at Big Horn Golf Club and known as the Battle at Big Horn. You are amazing. That is impressive. All right.
So who was in the first one?
David Duval and Tiger Woods.
It was Tiger and Duval was the first?
That was at that was 1990. They did a showdown at, or 1999, excuse me, the showdown at Sherwood. Then they did, Tiger Woods and Sergio Garcia did one. Tiger Woods and Annika Sorenstam.
Yeah, see, it jumped the shark, I think, after the first one or two. Like, I don't remember the rest of them.
Tiger and Jack Nicklaus took on Sergio and Lee Trevino. I got to go find that.
That's like the old Skins games. Remember the old Skins games that used to have, like, Thanksgiving weekend?
Skins games were cool.
That was great.
That one they should
mic up everybody. And
yeah, that was good. All right, are you guys the last show today?
We are the last show.
Okay.
We are the last show here. We are the first show down the road tomorrow.
All right, so Johnston and Flynn coming up next. Last show here from the Brighton Studios. Sean Silver with the Hub Headlines here.
Real quick,
yes.
Are we pouring out like half a one for the Dell Technologies Championship?
It's going to be like every other year.
I know. It'll be That's fine. What I said, just half a one.
Okay.
Not going away entirely, but and it's gonna won't be one next year.
And it's happening this year.
Yes.
You know, and hey, yesterday's history, tomorrow's a mystery. All we have is today. And today I'm still planning on attending Labor Day weekend, whatever that means. Thank you to Mark Munjam, Len Curtin, Brendan Steele, all on the show today. Billy Lanny, thank you. Sean Silver, the Hub Headlines. Johnston and Flynn are next.
Touchdown! Score!
From the Town Fair Tire Studios, Boston's home for sports is WBZ-FM and HD Boston, 98.5, the Sports Hub, the Beasley Media Group Station.